Let's assume that there is this move from more cognitive skills, particularly in the domain of the sector, to significantly higher cognitive skills in others, traditionally in the domain of the education sector. What changes do you think we need in our approach to this sector of education to address these particular problems? We did touch on this for the cognitive sector.
Yeah, thank you, Malcolm. Obviously, but to make sure that Queenslanders, no matter where they live, have access to quality jobs. And my point about making sure that we place vocational education and training on the same level as university, I think, is critical. As I said, a lot of the jobs that are going to grow will require those hands-on practical skills that the TAFE and other training providers provide. So I think making sure that we're investing in our skills and our vocational education and really trying to place it on an equal footing with university will be absolutely critical. We've got a big job to do here in Queensland. We fall slightly behind other jurisdictions in terms of the level of attainment of qualifications. We do well up until that Certificate 3 level, but Certificate 4 Diploma level, which you've heard of, will increasingly be more important. We have a real challenge here in Queensland. And the biggest barrier is still cost. So our programs around free TAFE for year 12 graduates, making TAFE more affordable, I think, part of this to encourage people to get the skills that they need.
Thank you, Minister. I think there is a huge opportunity before both the primary secondary and the tertiary education centres to collaborate on this challenge. Now, it's a question to you, I think it will be quite difficult for the digital giant Amazon, which is six of the top 5 years. Announced a $700 million investment to retrain the entire workforce. And they do have 650,000 staff. So it sounds like a big number. That's around 1,000 workers. But they want to retrain the entire workforce in a digital environment. Amazon has happy for this office that the journey to digital environment is very different. It requires a lot of investment. So also too, it's a very simple what is also the approach to assessing affliction falls through violence? And I know you mentioned this point about what the other professor called the truth message to the staff. So I have a second part of the question, which is the figure that the approach to assessing is that number one, it's 25 people who have to have an order of think of it, the
understand. So it's actually interesting today, the unemployment investment some kids have the job immediately. How does that equate to our spending investment? Our $25 million is just this year. And actually, when you write it down, we look pretty much similar to the percentage investment being put at a time and out. So, just an asset out over multiple years and relative to their workforce size. So, I think it is, and you know, when we talk about the $25 million the 10% of workforce, that's referencing a four new skills acquisition. That's not all of the training investment we do. In particular, if I think about the last year, we actually invested as much or potentially more in some of the soft skills development for our workforce shift. We had a really challenging 12 to 18 months for all of TAFE's workforces we're trying to grapple with so we also invested in trying to help people equip themselves with innovative working tools. We've shifted about 6,000 of our employees and asked them to work in an agile way of working. We couldn't just show up and do that overnight, so we invested in training for about 15,000 of our workforce just in that skill alone last year. So I think any employer needs to be looking at a substantial retraining of anywhere between 10 to 20% of its workforce on a balance of technical skill and soft skill in every year.
Thanks, Alex. I think for most organizations where training and development is considered discretionary spend, I think first, finding the right number is really important. So we have got a question to say, first I'll just remind the audience that the information that's displayed there on the screen gives you access to the whole software, so please feel free to post your questions. But we also have the old school option, the top technical option. So the way that will work is we want you to raise your hand and the microphone will be brought to you, so please don't start talking before you please. And we'd like you to state your name and your organisation that you represent before asking a question. And refrain from making more comments on the and just ask one brief question to our time partners. And we offer our new journalist friends to you. We just ask you to stay on topic and hoping you understand what it's like today. So I'll kick off with some questions that we have received already online and then we'll go to the first question. So this is to you, Alex. Given the need to continue to adapt and develop, what benchmarks are emerging for organizations to invest in the workforce? What is TAFE's?
I think it's a little bit similar to what you have your face. Yes. Invariably been different tools. I think I do hold a view that you should be thinking about somewhere between $1,000 to $1,500 per employee, which puts us in that new claim sort of sense. I think, though, there's a couple of things, and one to your comments after my response. The reason training does get treated as discretionary, and I think most organisations need to shift it into the absolutely untouchable bucket. It does show up at times on the productivity list where I work, and I am the first to say that it cannot be there and it shouldn't be there. But the responsibility we have to put in that bucket is to show a really clear plan about how we're going to spend that money
successful. So it's not just about having a dollar amount. Let it know what you're going to do with those dollars and how that's going to translate to the benefit of your employees and your organisation as customers. So you need to be able to balance all those things. So there's understanding the value of the business.
So I believe we have a question for the audience.
Thanks for letting me go old school. Thanks for getting me from PwC. I really love the conversation about training and investment, and that's fabulous that so much money is being invested in upskilling, particularly in the continuous year. One of the things we hear with our clients and also internally is that when you get the opportunity to digitally upskill as an employee, it's very hard to fit your day job in and the thing to upskill or any kind of upskilling. And there is a bit of evidence coming out to one of the things around future work is becoming more human, and becoming more human is about slowing down and allowing our business to be able to continue as we are meant to live. And sometimes the sort of expectations that could work is the competitive nature of business overrides that. And I'm just curious about your point of view and how you manage that.
It's the balance of needing to invest in the retraining. I've spoken about that before with time today. This is definitely a very large discussion in large workplaces. It's lovely that you provide it for Australia, but you know, I'd access it if only I could. I would love to have lots of techniques to answer to this. It's one of the things that a number of my team do is really trying to work on how we shift our leadership mindset to think about the fact that we need to have this more continuous and ongoing learning environment. But I think you actually have to hardwire into your workforce planning. One of the challenges that some of my team know that I'm doing with them at the moment, that's with Switch to Agile. It gives us a really interesting new lever. You don't need to have our job to do this. It's just the way that we're looking at it. We now plan our work. So one of the missions we're going to go after this autumn, look at that work, and we look at our resources, and that puts our capacity to do the work. And sometimes we'll be really surprised to know that we plan more work than we have capacity. But one of the disciplines, and I haven't landed this yet, but someone in the audience knows that I'm pushing on this particular point, is that we need to plan work for only 80% of our capacity. We can do that later today. But it's really hard to do. It's not how we're wired. We feel like we're all available to us. So this isn't going to solve itself by telling someone to care more about training. We have to wire the hardware that you don't have much work to plan, how much workforce capacity do we have, and you've got to create that space. So that's one thing that I think is important you've got to do. And the other thing, and I'm certainly seeing a bit of shift in new generations, is using your time differently. And this is where online learning sort of pushes the outcome gets continued. I know I've got lots of people in my team who travel on the train in the morning and travel on the train at home at night, and they use it to consume their 30 minutes bite-sized learning. So I think it's a two-way street. I think it's individuals thinking about where can they bring learning into their life, but we need to plan our work for the people.
Do we have any more questions from the audience? Or is it one?
Thank you. Pretty good. I'm glad we're going to talk about it. Minister, clearly Queensland's the work of great initiative. Thank you very much for that. We love it. We're very concerned about our real remote connections when it comes to transformation. We can't wait for young people away from the pandemic schools. We've got existing workers who live in this community, who want to start. And it counts for us to invest in training, but the difficulty is in those remote locations. If we sheer cost of travel. One thing to pay for the paid cost of travel and accommodation. Often you have only one or two people with their skill in that community. So it's a real challenge for those students to keep up gradually through this necessary transformation. Ensure that some of those remote areas are not displaced.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really important question. There's a lot of challenges for Queensland as a big decentralised state to make sure that no matter where you live, you're getting access to this learning. And all I can say is I think there is a real role of the TAFE to play in being flexible to meet those training needs. And as a government, we're always happy to work with TAFE, local councils, to make sure that that training is available for the region of Queensland. One of the big things we announced last year was an initiative called Skills Boost, which slashes the cost of TAFE courses in key priority areas, and it's different for each region. The training needs in the far north are going to be different to southeast Queensland. So that was a big shift for the department to actually have a subsidised list of training courses that was flexible for each community. So we do need to step up and make sure that we're providing flexible responses, particularly in smaller remote councils. But there are great programs like Student Curriculum Just for Work. We're looking at rolling out more traineeships in smaller regional councils to make sure that young people are getting access to training and that on-the-job ready training. So we're always happy to work with those smaller councils to make sure that they can meet their training needs. But certainly, as I said, the biggest barrier is the cost. So making sure that we can reduce the cost of whether it be micro-credentials or Certificate 3 or Certificate 4. What we can do as government with our levers to reduce the cost barrier, I think we'll see more people take up those skilling opportunities.
We'll move to an online question to Alex, just again, a little bit to Alex. How have you had to reorganise your team in this cost of change? So, new roles, new ways of working for students. I've got lots of people who are coming a bit up on that question because my team has been reorganised a lot. So we've gone, I think, for reasons we've gone for a huge amount of change. And if I look at what we looked up like 3 years ago, there's not much that looks the same. We've now shifted my function, certainly on the people side of my function, shifted into full scale agile ways of working. So we don't look like what you might expect a function to look like. Our work is organised around different groups of work, and that responds to different strategic priorities. So we've now this in strategy 2022, physically free, which is an important one, which is all about changing our ways of working. My team organised around that work. People called chapter leads, who manage the people. Focused on skills development, career development, so there's a people job and a work job, which also helps your training system. Because I think it's someone's core job to get every day about the development and the work that they're prepared to do. And I think that's a really special job that's emerging in organisations that we traditionally haven't valued a whole lot. Working through that, I think it's really important in the job we do that we don't just tell other people how to change, we give it a real go ourselves.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. It sounds like a great opportunity for us to showcase at some point in the future of workforce design. We have a question from Melissa. It's been mentioned that a strong pipeline of talent is required to build up to the future. Current, we are currently with falls behind. What level of education do you see?
Yeah, look, I think all of the things that we've talked about today are important. Through school education, we have to be getting those STEM skills. Students a lot of them. So anything we can do, particularly in primary schools, to introduce young people to technology. I was in Moranbah on Monday, and the Department of Education announced a $5 million partnership with BMA around getting STEM in all of the primary schools in the Bowen Basin. have to make sure we're getting those early skills, exposure to technology in primary school. Secondary school, I think, has to be about making sure that we are providing those pathways, whether it be to vocational education and TAFE or on to university. And that, again, comes back to partnering with industry so we can make sure that students can see what jobs and roles are available to them. You can't be what you can't see. So actually providing those role models in new and emerging industries to students in high school to get them thinking about what might be a future job or career for them or the skills they might like to acquire, I think is really important. And then we've got to make sure that our training providers in the vocational side of things for our universities are being responsive, are offering micro-credentials, because that is what industry is demanding. Because, as I said, currently a training package at federal level can take 4 to 6 years. So if industry says, we need these new skills and we need this new training package for this job, it's going to take 6 years to get a training qualification through. That's not working for anyone. We need to be more responsive and more flexible. And I think, you know, that there will be more collaboration, I think, between TAFEs and universities in the future. I was just told at UQ, the engineering students, when they finish their course, they go and do a six-week TAFE course. Because industry is demanding those hands-on skills before they walk through the door. I do think there will be a lot more collaboration.
Yes, definitely. We have an interesting question from Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. When you look around the room, you understand that it is very hard to have a fantastic service. Where are the millennials in this conversation? Because we haven't really looked at it. What advice would you give them?
So, I think there's a couple of things. The expectations of mine is just changing. So, I think this is sort of a bit of a to grapple with. We've got this massive shift in skills. We have a fair workforce that are grappling with changes to traditional career models, traditional pathways, and they've got this whole other thing coming, which is expecting job and work. Extremely flexible, still wants sort of speed levels or even more expedient progression than prior generations. So I think they really have to be in a consideration set as far as I think they'll come to the workplace. You know, the one thing is worried about do they have core digital skills? But I do think that there's a couple of things going on. I think they're resilience and they're robustness to deal with some of the challenges of the workplace. I'm not sure if being built as strongly as prior generations. So actually when you think about some of the soft skills development that we're going to need to prioritise to match the number of workforce ready, I think that will become more important. As employers, we're going to have to really rethink what the value proposition is as well. And I don't think it's just millennials. I was having this conversation with one of our team here today. I think in Australian employees, proper work, not just to do the work, is a sense of belonging and a sense of purpose. And if that purpose is bigger than the task at hand, and as employers, it can't be just the commercial proposition we're bringing to the table, it's the social proposition, it's the meaning that that organisation stands for. I think it's going to require a very different style of executive and corporate leadership than we've ever seen before.
I was just going to say that the Deloitte report I talked about, they actually reviewed all of the job ads on SEEK over a number of years. But the three skills that, that were required in these job ads that people were looking for were problem solving, time management, and teamwork, and customer service. So my advice would be to millennials, go and get those skills. They're the soft skills that, you know, your degree or your vocational education training course may or may not have provided you with, but you know, if you've got good customer service, problem solving skills, time management skills, you're going to be incredibly valuable to any business.
Very true. Obviously, coming from the TDT, where we highly value traditional undergraduate and postgraduate courses, I think there is a change of culture. Employers value that. Because obviously, traditional undergraduate is pretty much close to the pocketful of degrees. If I was obviously a postgraduate, I would have a question. So, the basis of
Bob, and I think really trying to make sure, again, early on, we're exposing young people in our schools to entrepreneurial skills and that creativity is so important. You know, our chief entrepreneur talks about this a lot. We actually need to get to this early to really value creativity and for that to be really part of the curriculum at our schools all the way through the high school because they are different skills. You know, to be an entrepreneur, you do have to have different skills and they're not the skills that we're currently teaching in our schools at all. So there is some work happening in that, but I do think we have a long way to go before we're actually getting those entrepreneurial skills, you know, in our schools through prep to year six, but and also in high schools. There's some pilot programs that we're trialing with the Office of the Chief Entrepreneur, but I think you know, the curriculum is so heavy with a whole, you know, for a whole range of great reasons. But we do actually need to do more around the creativity side. We're really focused on STEM, which is great. We're going to need that for the tech roles. But we're also going to need some entrepreneurial skills. And that's what I think is about.
Yes, I think we are out of time. Thank you to the audience for the questions. Sorry we couldn't get to all of those questions. So, thank you for your time. I apologize, I'm not to make a